A feminist, an outspoken activist, and a woman without a college education, Midge Costanza was one of the unlikeliest of White House insiders. Yet in 1977, under the Carter administration, she was the first female to be appointed an assistant to a U.S. president. Doreen Mattingly's new book, A Feminist in the White House, shows how many of the twists and turns in Costanza's life were lessons in the nature of power, the high price of being the first, and the possibilities and pitfalls of being both an idealist and a politician. The name of the book is A Feminist in the White House, Midge Costanza, The Carter Years and America's Culture Wars. Doreen Mattingly is an associate professor of women's studies at San Diego State University, and she joins us on the roundtable this morning. Doreen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Very nice to have you. As I mentioned in the introduction, you were a friend, you were a colleague. At what point did you start to think of writing the biography?
Midge Costanza asked me to help her with her memoirs while she was still alive. And so she had, she'd basically stolen her papers from the White House when she left. They are now in the Carter Library, and she had about 300 boxes of unsorted documents from her life. And so I started helping her sort them, and she'd been working on her memoirs since she left the White House. And so because we were friends and I was a scholar, I was helping her with that. And then she died quite unexpectedly in 2010 and left the papers to me. And on her deathbed, I promised that I would write the book. And so it changed from being a memoir to being more of a scholarly history. But it was really the product of a deathbed promise.
So once you have that promise, how much was already done in the sense of the papers laid out and knowing the trajectory of what you were going to take on?
Not a whole lot, actually. It really was not an area that I was a specialist in before getting all of her papers, and so I had to learn a lot just about the time and about the Carter administration, and about which of her papers were significant, and what story did I want to tell out of it. Well, I mean, I also had to just literally, physically organize them. There were, however, a number of interviews with her and people who she'd worked with that were done right after she left the White House with another collaborator on her memoirs. And so I had dozens and dozens of taped interviews that, once they were transcribed, gave me a lot of guidance and kind of became the core of the book as I really tried to tell the story of what happened from her perspective. And that's what the interviews allowed me to do.
How did she come to know and come into the field of vision, if you will, of President Carter?
So she was from Rochester, New York, where she was the first woman on the city council. And in 1974, during the Watergate hearing, she was drafted to run for Congress against Barbara Conable, a very popular and successful Republican congressman. Jimmy Carter that year was the chair of what is now the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. And so he was traveling across the country campaigning for Democrats that had a chance to take safe Republican seats that year. So he came out to campaign for Midge Costanza, and the two became immediate friends. They really, they were close friends. They really thought highly of each other. I would say they loved each other, not in a romantic way, but, you know, in a professional and personal way. They were very close friends, and it was immediate.
And you point out in the book that when she came into this role into the White House, people were very interested in her. People were fascinated by her.
Well, she was the first woman to be named assistant to a president. And so that alone garnered attention, particularly in 1977 during the women's movement, when there were a lot of female firsts, and that had become a kind of standard trope for newspaper articles about the women's movement. But she was also the only Northeasterner in the Carter White House. She was from a very working class, immigrant, Sicilian background, which made her different from the rest of Carter's Georgian men. And she was also someone who hadn't gone to college and who had come up through the party and kind of through property development in Rochester. She was very different and also very funny. She was incredibly funny and very open. So the press had more access to her and was more interested in her, if for no other reason than because she would talk to them.
Ultimately, she was in the White House for 20 months. What was it about that particular stint that allowed her to advocate on so many different issues?
Well, part of it was just the time in history. As the title says, this is really the dawn of the culture wars. Many of the conservative white Southerners, evangelicals, who have become the base of the Republican Party, voted for Jimmy Carter. They were Democrats. And it was during the Carter administration that Republicans lured them out of the Democratic Party and into the Republican Party on social issues, issues like abortion at the time, the ERA, and also beginning during that time, gay rights. And so those were the issues that she championed, and those were also the issues of a kind of reorganizing of political parties. And so it was, you know, she was an interesting person, but she dealt with the pivotal issues at a crucial moment in history.
And she also, through that process, became a lightning rod.
She did, for both sides. For Democrats who were unhappy with Carter's, what they felt was Carter's move to the right, Carter's moderation, and so the treatment of Midge Costanza became a symbol of how Carter was betraying progressives in the Democratic Party. She was featured, for example, in Doonesbury. And for those who wanted to highlight that the Democratic Party was secular humanist, was against family values, her meeting with gays in the White House, her support for federal funding for abortions, her feminism, all became tools of the right to pull social conservatives into the Republican Party.
You write in the book that during the summer of 1977, that she hosted a meeting of pro-choice presidential appointees who shared her dismay at President Carter's strongly worded support for a bill that banned federal abortion funding. How did that go over with the president?
Well, Midge Costanza and President Jimmy Carter had a very unusual relationship in that he really did not confront her directly or tell her what to do. And so Carter was unhappy with it. That was the kind of politics that he detested. He felt betrayed and he was angry, but he didn't take it up with her. He told other people who worked for him, you know, he told his cabinet that he didn't approve of it, but not her. And so she could continue to tell the press, Carter hasn't told me to back off, because that was accurate. Now, Hamilton Jordan, his chief of staff, had told her, but Carter didn't. Carter, and that's part of what gave her the space to operate the way that she did.
You also talk in that chapter that there were frequent calls for her to step aside and calls for her resignation. What allowed her to last?
Well, I think that it was partly because the Carter administration had used her as a symbol of their inclusiveness. And so by creating her as that kind of a symbol, they made it hard to remove her. And the original title of the book was An Unwilling Token. And what she realized when she was in the White House was that in lieu of progress on the issues that she cared about, so in lieu of fighting for women's policy, they appointed a high-level woman. And so she was that kind of symbol to America, that the Carter administration was open, that it was different from the Nixon White House, that he cared about women's issues, that he cared about, you know, northeastern cities and the poor. And so because she was that kind of symbol, it was very hard for them to remove her without ultimately telling her constituents, we don't care about your issues. And when she was forced out, that's exactly what happened. People read the symbolism of, without Midge Costanza and the White House, our issues are no longer a priority.
And how much of this had to do with, well, of her being a woman and what trail she was blazing at the time?
It had to do with her being a woman, but I think it also had to do with her being a working class, an immigrant woman who had forged a different path. She was able to be a woman who was running for Congress precisely because she didn't let anybody tell her what to do. You know, she grew up in that environment, you know, on the edge of the mafia in the building trades industry as a 5 foot tall woman, kind of tough and willing to go her own way and call it like she saw it. And that's what put her in a position that Carter could meet her and admire her. And those qualities were the same qualities that made her, in some ways, not the kind of token that they wanted, because she was so different from everyone else in the White House that, in a way, she had nothing to gain by going along. Even if she had done everything she wanted, she wouldn't really have been an insider. But she also had forged a path of opposition, of being an outsider, of making her own way, and being respected for her integrity. And so that was, you know, that's how she got there, and in a way, that's how she got pushed out.
You write about her decline and fall. What was the ultimate? Was it a matter of being the straw that broke the camel's back?
It was. There was actually, in some ways, a minor incident. She was going to be on Good Morning America to announce a new push for the Equal Rights Amendment, and was asked the night before by Gerald Rafshoon, who was Carter's communications director, to call them and tell them she had a headache and that she was going to cancel. And it was because there was a new allegation of drugs in the White House they didn't want her talking about, even though she didn't know about it and had no involvement in it. And she refused to. She said, you know, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to start lying for you. And when she didn't, then Carter said, why didn't you lie? And she said at that moment she knew that it was over. When the president asked her to lie after Watergate, and that was very much on people's mind and how they understood her job, she said she knew once the president had asked her to lie that it was over.
How did it impact the relationship?
Well, in many ways it ended their relationship, and I think that for years after leaving the White House, the hardest part was trying to come to terms with that lost friendship. And I think in the end, the two of them disappointed each other. So she moved to California to begin trying to write her memoirs and got involved in the politics in Los Angeles and then later in San Diego. She ran into Carter periodically at Democratic Party functions, and he wrote a very nice letter when she passed in 2010. But in a way, it ended their friendship.
You do talk about her last job being that of a public affairs officer and in San Diego. And basically, it was sort of going back to her roots of working in a place in a dynamic very similar to Rochester.
I think so. I think that what she did in San Diego was much like what she did in Rochester, of being a person behind the scenes who was a brilliant public speaker, who worked for issues that she cared about, who worked for candidates that she cared about, in addition to the work she did as a public affairs officer for District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis. She worked for scores of local organizations. She would bring in her friends from Los Angeles and Washington to do fundraisers. She would train candidates in public speaking. She would help to put together organizations to train young people for political leadership, to support women going into political leadership. I think that she was happiest at the beginning and the end of her career when she could focus more on her idealism and less with the more dangerous politics of being in the White House.
The name of the book, A Feminist in the White House, Midge Costanza, The Carter Years and America's Culture Wars. It is published by Oxford University Press. Doreen Mattingly, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.